Susan.
Jordan.
How's it going?
It's going great.
Welcome to Dallas, Texas.
Thank you so much. It's great to be back. Dallas is really feeling like the second home now.
Yeah.
Because I'm here so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every month.
Very comfortable.
Every month.
Yeah.
All right. So before we start, if you don't know who Susan is my co-coach in the Inner Circle. We run the Inner Circle together. We've been a team since like 2017, but mm-hmm. we've been working together even longer. Susan and I started working together one-on-one coaching. I started doing your programs in 2015, mm-hmm. I think so. And then in 2017 came on and we do the Inner Circle together. And so once a month, Susan comes to Dallas and we do the next Inner Circle edition. And let's get into it. So we're going to do a Q&A.
Let's go.
So I've got a bunch of questions from my Instagram Q&A that we're going to go over. Susan does not know which questions I've picked. Some of them are fitness. Some of them are not fitness.
All right.
So let's see what we've got. Okay. So the first question is from Away We Go. And she asked, how do you switch from a cut to maintenance? So how do you switch from weight loss to maintenance? How much to increase your calories? It's a really good question, mm-hmm. a question I've been getting a lot ever since I started my mini cut. So how do you explain to people how to switch from a cut to maintenance, how many calories they should increase?
Go to the Inner Circle and look at our manual, because we do have a manual on this very topic and in the Inner Circle and exactly how to do it. But the long story short here, you add calories back in gradually. And I think especially if you're a little bit worried about the scale and now it's going to go up a little bit and you're worried about all that, add calories back in slowly. And I like to think of it by the week. So like you keep eating kind of where you are, but maybe 3 or 4 days a week, you're going to eat a little bit more, maybe 100 calories more on those days. So by the end of the week, you're in the plus column, 300 to 400 calories, something like that. And remember, that's 300 or 400 calories over a week.
Over a whole week.
Per
right.
day.
Correct.
Right? So you may not see a whole lot of change that first week by adding 300 or 400. So what you do is you do that again, but you add an additional 300 to 400 calories over the next week. So now you're in the plus column, 600 to 700, whatever, 100
yep.
calories. And at that point, you might start seeing the scale slowly go back up another pound, 2 pounds, however much it's going to go back up. And I think what gets people panicked at this point is, oh my God, I'm gaining fat.
Yes, correct.
Right? But if you've added calories like I just described, no, this is not fat. You haven't eaten enough for that yet.
Correct.
You haven't. What's happening is maybe you have more content in your belly because you do have more calories. Maybe you're holding on to some water as
yep.
a result of those calories, whatever. That's really important to understand what those what the weight gain is and what it's not, right? But we were just talking about this on our live about how maintenance is kind of a range.
Yep.
Right? It's not a number. And you, by adding these calories in slowly, you're going to find where your little, I call it a maintenance bubble. You're going to hang out in this bubble.
Yep.
And that takes weeks to figure where out, maybe even longer
yeah,
where
months.
That.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it could take a long time. But I think the whole point of this is, add calories back in slowly because the scale's going to take its time. You're going to feel like you have more control. I guess it's more of a mindset thing. You know, you're going to feel more in control of
yeah.
what's going on rather than, okay, I'm just going to eat 200 to 300 more a day.
Yeah.
And then watch the scales skyrocket up and then you're like, ah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think there are two ways to really go about it. The first one is like Susan explained, where you slowly, gradually add a few hundred in per week. And this works really well for the people who do not like seeing those big scale fluctuations.
Mm-hmm.
For me, because I'm totally fine with the scale fluctuations and I know around what my maintenance is because I've done this so many times, is I would just increase all those calories back immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So I would increase calories more quickly, knowing the scale is going to jump up way more quickly because I have more food in my stomach, because my glycogen stores are more full, because I'm holding on to more water. So I don't worry about that scale fluctuation and I know I'm in maintenance because I've done this a million times. But if you have never done this before, and you don't like seeing huge scale fluctuations,
mm-hmm.
do exactly what Susan said. You
yeah.
slowly increase. And the key to slowly increasing is if you're adding in, we'll call it 200 calories a week for the first month or so, well, then maybe you want to pick 1 or 2 days in which you're more hungry and add those 200 calories just on those 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you figure out, okay, cool, I haven't really gained any weight after a week or two, then you add in 200 more calories per week. And you could add those on to the days that you already added or put them on different days so you can spread them out a little bit more. And you continue in this strategy until you find where your weight tends to, where your weight will more or less maintain within this bubble that Susan explained. So weight maintenance is not you stay the same weight every day. Weight maintenance is anywhere between like a 3 to 10 pound range that you'll fall within on a consistent basis, depending on you and your own scale fluctuations and what you deem appropriate. So it's a learned process over time.
Yeah, and if you've never spent any time in maintenance, then maybe just doing the slow process is probably going to be beneficial for you because you can really see this start to form over time. And then once you know where your maintenance is, you don't have to do the slow process anymore. I mean, you could hop from one to the other.
Yes.
But if you've never been to maintenance, probably best to take your time, add the calories back in, track your progress that way so you can actually see it all unfold.
Yeah, I think one of the best ways I've heard it described is a lot of people look at the diet ends or weight loss ends as soon as the cut is over. Mm-hmm. But it really ends once you've fully transitioned into maintenance. Mm-hmm. So maintenance is actually just an extension of your weight loss phase, mm-hmm. of your cut phase. And a lot of people, the issue is they gain their weight back so quickly because like, oh, well, I'm done now, so now I'm going to eat as much as I want. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, look at maintenance as just a simple extension of your weight loss phase. Progressively increase your calories slowly until you get to a comfortable point. Then you can be a little bit more relaxed with it.
Yeah.
But if you just go from straight weight loss phase directly into I'll just eat whatever I want, you're not going to maintain your weight loss.
Yeah, not at all.
Okay, someone asked, let's see, Alice DeVry asked, what is your take on these treatments where they freeze your fat? They do it at many salons. What do you think?
I ain't gonna have anybody freeze anything on me. I don't know. That sounds awful.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine this will give you any long-term benefit.
No.
In any way, shape, or form. No.
I was at the dermatologist a few weeks ago, and they were offering, they had a whole big sign, like, we do, like, fat freezing, and it took every ounce of my self-control to not say something to them, be like, why in the hell are you doing this? It's a very easy way for them to make money. Mm-hmm. It's super expensive. It's super, super expensive. I think it's booking at least like 6 to 12 sessions or something, and each session is several hundred, if not several thousand dollars. I know one of them is called Cool Sculpting.
That's the one I've heard of. Yeah, yes. It's, Cool Sculpting.
It sounds cool, and based on, you know, the videos that they have of it, and they make everything sound like it works, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Don't waste your money.
That's not how it works.
No.
It does, just period, end of story. Full stop.
Sounds too good to be true. It is.
Yeah.
It is.
We'll put it this way. If it did work, then everyone would be skinny.
Everyone would be.
Yeah.
And everyone would be doing it.
Yeah, exactly. It would also probably be way more expensive than it actually is.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's a question that has nothing to do with fitness, but I thought it would be a good one to talk about just for the sake of a good conversation. Jay Kissel wrote, what is something you learned this year that changed your mind about something? So what is something you learned this year that changed your mind about something?
This year.
Or in recent years.
The whole cardio thing has been a recent change for me, probably. And so, I mean, I could say that, but I'm trying to think of something that maybe I've learned. The reason why I started jiu-jitsu, because that's very recent for me, right?
Yeah.
If you would have told me a year ago that I would have done a grappling kind of sport.
Yeah. Yeah.
At my age, I would have said, yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's,
get out of here.
That's funny. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to be a wrestler. No, I mean, I don't know. I had a negative thought about sports like that. Not like, ooh, it's, I mean, but for me, a negative thought. Like, nothing, that's nothing that I would ever do. I don't want to be rolling around with somebody. Why would people want to do, you know? So while this is probably not really the true intent of this question, I feel like that is something that has changed dramatically for me.
Yeah.
I mean, because I'm obviously doing it now.
Yeah.
And
for those who don't know, how old are you?
62.
62, and started jiu-jitsu at 62.
At 62.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, it's quite an undertaking, to be honest.
Yeah.
And it's something that I question a lot. I mean, you know, I mean, this part of the deal, but I feel like as I've gone on, wow, it's changed. Obviously, it changes how I view the whole. I'm intrigued by this sport now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really curious and I want to learn. I'm in complete learning mode.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun, too, because I don't remember the last time I've been in true learning mode from the very beginning.
Yeah.
You know, of something. So it may be a bit of a cop-out kind of answer.
But no, it's
really
not.
I feel like that is really a big deal for me.
Yeah. And maybe you just proven to yourself that, like, even though you know you can do hard things, but proving to yourself even more, like, I can do even harder things than I thought, and you know, learning how to defend yourself and learning all this stuff, like, or getting a forward roll, you got a somersault, right?
Oh my god, so Jordan, I've been talking about this because it's forward and backwards rolls have been my nightmare. That is the one thing in jiu-jitsu, please god don't make me do that today kind of thing.
I'm
course we're gonna do it today. And lo and behold, I can backward roll down the mat. I'm not great at it. Like, I was watching the class today, and they're like, they're just going, that ain't me. I mean, I have to think about it.
Yeah.
I have to think about where's my head going, what shoulder. I really have to think about it. But I can do it now.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So
that's amazing.
How about you?
So I was thinking about this one, and there's something. So for me, I've just learned a lot about pregnancy and about childbirth and mainly just watching my wife do it. That's just, I had no idea how difficult it was from, you know, carrying the baby and like the actual physical aspect of how difficult it would be to carry the baby. The emotional aspect of seeing your body change and all of that and dealing with that. I mean, there's so many aspects that I've been watching, but even, for example, our friend Josh Smith, who I've known since I was a teenager, and he's a psychologist, incredible. He was telling me, he's like, listen, I wish someone told me how difficult breastfeeding can be, and there can be so many issues with it. And he told me that, and I sort of, like, this was before my daughter was born. I was like, yeah. I didn't pay attention to it. And then watching my wife breastfeed, fortunately, like, our daughter latched really quickly and all of that, but it was still like very difficult.
Yeah.
And there was painful at the beginning, and it was learning like how to hold her and how to position herself, because it's going to be a long period of time. And then it's just so many aspects of pregnancy and childbirth and raising a child and keeping your child alive that it didn't change my mind as much as it enlightened me. It taught me something that I was completely ignorant about. The physical side, the mental side, the emotional side, and now watching my wife getting back into her health and fitness and really, you know, prioritizing it and seeing how amazing she's doing, but also seeing how the difficulties that she'll have along the way, like the mental blocks, the emotional blocks, and she's doing unbelievably incredible, but still, you know, we'll have conversations on things she's struggling with, and it's just all things that I had never paid attention to because I had never been so close with someone who was going through it. It's been a very eye-opening experience.
I'm sure
that's been very unique and special for me just to learn more about that. Okay, so someone wrote, Counting Joy wrote, I have 80 pounds plus to lose. Can you talk more about a rapid weight loss approach? Do I just cut more calories? You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, someone in that scenario would probably be a decent candidate
for
a rapid fat loss protocol, which we have in the inner circle too.
Yes.
That is part of what you get when you join. And it's not great for people that don't have very much weight to lose. But
Correct.
For this particular person, it could be because you're set up on lower calories, but because you have more weight to lose, you have those low calories are going to be higher for you than maybe they would have been for somebody else. So you might be a better candidate to be able to sustain that for a short period of time. I also think for someone like that, it could be a great motivator, yes, maybe out of the gate.
Yeah.
You know, here we go talking about motivation again. But I think that this could be really something. The only area of concern I have is when they feel like they have to continue it to keep the
correct
success going.
Yeah.
And they have to transition, and there might be a little bit of funkiness in that transition,
yep,
to a normal calorie deficit. You know, I think that would be the only thing I would look out for, but I think it could be a great thing for,
yeah,
someone like her.
Yeah, so there's a lot of research showing that when people have a significant amount of weight to lose, and generally it's at least 50 plus pounds, so this person would be a great candidate. If you have at least 50 plus pounds to lose, an initial rapid fat loss protocol can be very helpful to help people not just lose weight, but also be able to maintain their weight loss in years to come. And there are many reasons for this, but if we look at the mindset of someone who's at least 50 pounds overweight, if not 80, 100, 150, 200 plus, oftentimes these people feel like failures.
Mm-hmm.
They just do. They feel like they're failing. They feel like nothing's ever going to work. They've often tried numerous things over and over and over again, and it's never been able to stick. So in their mind, they think, well, why even bother? It's probably not going to work. So one of the great things about a rapid fat loss protocol for these people is it shows them very quickly, oh, they're not broken. Like,
yeah,
this can actually work.
Yeah.
And the key is to make sure that your rapid fat loss protocol is as sustainable as possible. Now, inherently, a rapid fat loss protocol is not sustainable because the calories are too low. But there are ways to make it something that you can transition into more sustainable. So the way that we've structured the rapid fat loss protocol in the Inner Circle, and this is something I developed many years ago, and I think this is one of the more genius things that I've done, if I do say so myself, I use what's called an ascending caloric schema. And I came up with this, I think, in 2013. But basically, I realized that most people are very motivated at the very beginning of their diet. And as the diet goes on, they get less and less and less motivated, which is normal. And I realized, oh, so what if we take the most, when someone is most motivated, and make it the most difficult at the very beginning, and then transfer it slowly into something that gets easier and easier, mm-hmm, and easier over time?
Makes perfect sense.
Usually day one of the diet, people are absolutely perfect,
mm-hmm,
in general. Like, I don't care if they're doing a juice cleanse or whatever it is, their stupid thing they're doing is they're very strict on day one. And they want to see progress on day two and day three and day four. So the ascending caloric schema starts with your calories as low as they're ever going to go. And then progressively over the rapid fat loss protocol, they slowly increase until a point in which at the very end of the rapid fat loss protocol, you're essentially at a more sustainable calorie deficit.
Mm-hmm.
So the first 3 days are the most difficult, but the first 3 days of any diet are when you're most consistent anyway.
Yeah.
So whereas most diets, what they do is you start with your calories high and you progressively lower them over time. And that might make sense for someone who doesn't have a lot to lose and needs to eat more at the beginning and needs something a little bit more sustainable. But for someone who has a lot of weight to lose at the very beginning, we start off low and then progressively increase. So by the end of the protocol, you've already transitioned into something that's more sustainable, and the hardest part is already over.
Mm-hmm.
So with every passing day, the light gets closer to the end of the tunnel. You get closer and closer and closer so that it's less and less and less difficult and much more sustainable. So that's how we structure the one we have in the Inner Circle. There are many protocols. The main thing is, if you're going to try it on your own, which I don't really recommend, and I would recommend at least getting some professional help, is you want to keep protein as high as possible.
Yeah.
When you do a rapid fat loss protocol, protein has to be the major macronutrient that you're eating, the vast majority of food coming from protein, so that you can maintain as much muscle as you possibly have, and also to keep you as full as possible.
Absolutely.
Okay, so next question. Jenny Dion said, no results while in a deficit and working out for 5 weeks. Do I change it up or keep going? What do you think?
Well, first thing is you keep going. But while you're going, I like to tell everybody this. Do a little self-audit of your nutrition.
Yep.
You know, let's really double down. And we were literally just talking about this on my podcast,
yep,
too, about give yourself this challenge of go for another 4 weeks and be 100% consistent. And that means no wiggle room. You have control over everything. No guessing how much you're eating. You know, you give yourself 30 days of 100% absolute consistency.
Yep.
And now let's talk after that.
Yeah.
And see what happens. Because what we were saying was, obviously you can't keep that up forever. And you're not supposed to. But when you are that dialed in for that period of time, the loopholes are going to start to appear, if there are any, right? And it could be that there aren't any. It could be that this is just kind of a normal, you know, your body's just hanging on for a while. This is not unusual at all. But I also would tell this person to make sure you're taking measurements too, because if those are changing, well, then you're probably doing something right. You just keep after this, right?
Yeah.
But if your measurements aren't really moving either, then I think doing this little self-audit challenge of 30 days and being meticulous is the way to go. I don't think you really change anything until you can show that you have mastered consistency.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the biggest issues here, aside from what you said, which is like major, which is consistency, which is I think probably the biggest one. Another one of the major issues is when people, I've literally, I'll never forget this. When I was doing one-on-one coaching, I would have clients say, "I just don't know why I'm not seeing any progress." And I would look at their weight chart and their pictures and all that stuff and be like, "You've literally lost like 4 pounds in the first month.
Yeah.
What do you mean you haven't made any progress?" And like, "Well, I just feel like it's not working." It's like, "But you've lost 4 pounds.
Yeah.
Why do you feel like it's not working?"
"It's working."
Like, "Well, I don't know. I don't really see many changes." "Well, yeah, it's been one fucking month. But you've lost 4 pounds. Mm-hmm. This is working. Or you've lost 2 inches," mm-hmm. whatever it is. Like, it's clearly working. And I think people have very unrealistic expectations and also aren't keeping track of their progress properly.
Yeah.
So one, I would say, like, for you to say I've been in a deficit, let's assume that you actually are in a deficit and take out the chance of you not being in a deficit. Let's say you actually are in a deficit and you have been working out for 5 weeks straight. There's no way that you wouldn't be making progress.
No, there's no way. There's no way. So you're making progress somewhere.
Yeah, there has to be.
And I often see people who say that, and maybe not this person, but other people who have said something similar, is that they have their head stuck in the day-to-day scale readings, that they cannot zoom out and take a look. Oh, in fact, you haven't been playing around these 2 or 3 pounds. In fact, you have lost pounds,
yes,
over the course of the month.
Exactly.
Because you kind of lost track. Because you're so into the minutia of the day-to-day,
yep,
right? You need to take a step back and look at the bigger picture and your trend, and you will see that you probably have made some progress. Maybe not as much progress as you would like, but you've been making progress. And then if you're not taking measurements, you have no idea.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think taking measurements are super underrated.
Oh, yeah.
There obviously is a standard of error, a range of error, because you can't be perfect with your measurements, but mm-hmm. there's also a range of error with weighing yourself, yep, and all of that stuff. There's always a range of error. But aside from measurements, my favorite thing is using clothing.
Yeah.
It's if your clothing is starting to feel looser, your pants are starting to feel looser, it's working.
Jeans are a great one.
Yeah, jeans are my favorite.
Jeans are a great one for this because jeans can be like the death of people trying on,
yeah,
jeans. You know, I mean,
yeah,
I still don't like doing it. But have a pair of jeans. Don't wash them. Don't do any of that because, you know, when you wash them, they
get
a little
tighter.
Funky.
Yeah.
So don't wash them. Just have them. Try them on. Get kind of a feel for how they fit and then put them back in your closet.
Yeah.
And use them.
Yeah. Yeah. Have that one pair of testing,
yep,
pants. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say, make sure you're using measurements and you're using pictures and using all these things. But also going back to if you're legitimately not making progress, like you're actually not losing weight, you're actually not losing inches, any of that, then you're not in a calorie deficit and you're not being consistent,
yeah,
which goes back to what you were saying,
yeah,
which is take seven days straight, take 30 days straight, whatever, and be 100% consistent for that entire time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a no bullshit, no excuses discussion with yourself and you say, "Hey, I'm going to be 100% consistent for the next 14 days, for the next 2 weeks," and you lose weight, well, then that means you were not actually being consistent beforehand.
Yeah.
There, it makes sense to have these little audit periods where, like, you know what, screw it, no excuses, I'm mm-hmm. going to take 7 days, be 100% consistent.
I think it's a great exercise.
Yeah.
I think it's a great exercise. And also, I mean, it plays into, are you really in a calorie deficit or are you in a calorie deficit mindset where you're thinking about it all the time?
Yes, exactly.
But you're not really executing.
Yep. That's exactly
this
right.
This will point that out very quickly.
So this is a great question. Peppermint Patcher wrote, "Can I see benefits from lifting a consistent weight? Is increasing weight essential to strength?" So do you have to consistently lift heavier in order to make progress?
Man, I guess, you know, what is your goal? You know, if you want to get as strong as possible, yeah. I mean, weight's going to have to be a part of that. But are there things that you can do, like if maybe you don't have access to a lot of weight right now, there's a ton of things that you can do to make things more challenging with what you have. You have to think a little bit out of the box, but ultimately, big picture, if your goal is to be as strong as humanly possible, well, then you're going to need to have some weight to help you get there. And I think this plays into people that want the benefits of a gym at home without having all the same stuff.
Yeah. How do I get the same benefits of lifting weights without actually lifting weights?
Yeah.
How do I get the benefits of reading that book without actually reading the book?
Yeah. It doesn't work that way. So if strength is a goal, you're going to have access to weight. Now, can you make some progress? Of course, without all of that, you know, adding half reps, adding pauses, whatever, things like that, of course. But that carries you up to a point, too.
Yeah.
You know? And at some point, you can't do 200 reps of something. And yeah, I mean, time Correct. Becomes an issue. I mean,
Correct.
The practicality of all of that is not great. So, yeah. I mean, resistance is not only there for strength, but, man, if you want to keep your bone density up as you get older, you're going to need weight. You know, and you're going to want to continue that. If you want to build some muscle, you're going to, you know, all of those things. You're going to need weight.
Yeah. And there's definitely a middle ground here. Like, if your goal is to be a high-level power lifter, then yeah, you're definitely going to need to lift heavy weight. If your goal is to be a strong enough mom or dad or husband or wife or just individual, just a strong enough to be healthy, then you don't need to be lifting as heavy as possible every single day.
Right.
There is a term in strength and conditioning that we use called progressive overload. And progressive overload is a fancy way of saying finding ways to progressively put more stress onto your body and muscles and tendons and joints and ligaments so that you can get stronger. Mm-hmm. That's what progressive overload is you and the easiest way to do that is to lift more weight. So progressive overload could be going from 25 pounds to 27.5 pounds or 27.5 to 30 or from 100 to 115. So you add more weight, but you could also progressively overload by, like Susan was saying, doing slower repetitions. So keep the weight the same, but you use a full range of motion or a better range of motion, or you have more time under tension, or you add a half a rep, or you increase the total number of reps that you're doing, or maybe you decrease the rest period a little bit. There are ways to progressively overload without adding more weight, but there's a middle ground here. So let's say and I'm just throwing out a random scenario. Let's say you're a 45-year-old woman, and right now you deadlift 225 pounds, which is two big 45-pound plates on each side. In life, you're probably not going to need to get stronger than that. Like, you don't need to. And with more weight comes more risk, right? So as you put on another 25 pounds on each side, so now you're lifting 275, it's more risky. It's going to be more risky. So are you okay with being a little bit more sore in your lower back? Are you okay being a little bit more risky? If you are okay with that risk in order to lift more weight, fantastic. But if you don't want to risk that anymore, well, now maybe you just stay at that weight. And then you improve your technique, you improve time under tension, you do other variations of deadlifts that don't require you to lift heavier than that, but you can still make progress without lifting heavier than that 225, but you're not going to make anywhere near as fast progress as if you were adding more weight on top of it. But again, like, for what purpose?
That's the question,
what's
right?
What's the purpose?
And I think you can evolve with this too. Lord knows, as you're talking just now, I'm thinking of myself. I'm thinking, rewind the clock a couple years, 3 years, 2 years ago, not doing anything the same like I used to.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad thing. It's a different thing.
Correct.
You know, I've evolved. I don't need to deadlift 300 pounds.
Yeah, you don't need to anymore.
I just really, not that I ever could, but that was kind of...
What was your best deadlift?
265.
265. Mm-hmm. And so it's just not worth it to go that heavy right now.
It's really not. It's really not. And I have to admit, part of me is bummed about that.
Yeah.
There is a part. It's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Because the reality is you kind of get moving on and I really don't want to.
But you've gotten stronger in other lower body exercises.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And upper body exercises. Yeah. And now goals are based around that. And goals are based around strengthening my hip and all the things that we're doing now. And it's not a bad thing.
Yep.
So it goes back to, what is the goal? You know, what is your goal? And the goal can evolve.
The goal can evolve, and... Let's say you don't want to lift more than 225 in your deadlift, but, like, who knows, maybe your lunge is, you can barely do it holding onto a 10-pound dumbbell in each hand. Cool. So now spend the next year getting your lunges strong.
Now we're talking
getting
my
your
language.
Lunge like 15 pounds, 20 pounds, 25, 30, 35 pounds in each hand. Like that will take a year plus and you're going to get much stronger. So it doesn't have to be every single exercise and you don't have to be a world record lifter, but ideally you can be in increasing weight and increasing your strength in a variety of different ways.
Yeah, I love that.
All right, so next question. Okay, here's a good one. Alec Hunt asked, do you have advice for weightlifting as an obese person? How would you recommend someone who's a complete beginner, they've never lifted weights, and they are severely overweight? How do you recommend them start to get into strength training?
You know, it's so interesting because I feel like I see people in my gym that are in this scenario. And they're doing things that I don't think I would have that person do.
Like what?
Like a single leg lunge or a lunge or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, no, not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet. Both feet on the ground.
Yes. Yep.
At the time. Also, getting down on the floor.
Yep.
And coming up off the floor. I mean, while there's a lot of great things you can do on the floor, I don't know if getting them up and down and up and down is necessarily in anybody's best interest.
Yep.
You know, that's hard.
Very hard.
That right alone is tough. So I think those things, I've even used machines on people before to get them started on some things. You could even do box squats. But I mean, there's so many things to do without putting stress on a single knee, which is what I would worry about, on a single hip. So single leg stuff, unless, for instance, static lunge. If you want to try a lunge, that's where I would start.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not right at the beginning with somebody, but that would be like step one of a single leg exercise. And I would just keep everything really basic, 3 exercises, 4 exercises maybe, where they can feel successful, where they feel confident, and where they can move some weight. Because guess what? That's going to light them on fire.
Yeah.
You know? And that's half the battle,
yep.
I feel like, for someone who's new, who feels self-conscious maybe about being in the gym or something like that. I think we overcomplicate that.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, it should be very simple, basic program. And like Susan was saying, the simple things can be very, very difficult, no matter the person, no matter their level. But something as simple as getting on the ground and standing back up for someone who is sedentary and significantly overweight, like that takes a lot of time and energy. I think for me, the first thing I think about is, let's say you have someone, maybe you're struggling, maybe you're a little bit overweight and you're nervous to go to the gym. I think the best thing you can do is just sort of, if you're nervous to be in there and all you're thinking about is the people looking at you, grab a pair of dumbbells and then go to a corner that's sort of out of sight, out of mind. You don't have to stay there forever. And I do think it would be great if eventually you get to a point where you can be out there on the main floor with everybody. But most important is I just want you to feel as comfortable as possible. And if that means you find your own private area where people aren't looking at you as much, amazing.
Yeah. And go in with a plan.
Yeah.
I mean,
have a plan.
Go in, know what you're going to do.
Yep. I think mastering basic movements first is most important. So I don't look at it from a muscle perspective, like which muscle are we working. I look at it, which movement are we training today or in this session or in this exercise. So I want you to get really good at body weight squats.
Yeah, 100%.
Body weight squats, and starting off with something like a box squat with just your body weight is perfect. And then progressing to not using a box, and then progressing to adding some weight in a goblet position. So like that's number one, get your squat down. Number two, I'd like to make sure you can do a plank. Getting a plank down. I think a plank is a really important thing to shoot for. Maybe starting with a plank on your knees, or if you can do it on your toes and your elbows, amazing. But just starting with on your knees is a great place to begin. I think a hands elevated push-up is a great one. You could do it against a wall. You could do it against a bench. But I would say a squat, a plank, a push-up, a dumbbell row. Starting with a dumbbell row is like you'll be doing this for the rest of your training career. Dumbbell rows are a really, really important one to learn. And then I would also do some type of a hip thrust as well, like a body weight glute bridge. Just you're on the ground and you do a glute bridge. And the cool part about this is, let's say you're doing it, you could do a superset. You do a body weight glute bridge, rollover, and you go into a plank.
That's a perfect Boom. Superset.
There's your superset. Yep. You don't have to worry about standing up, going down, standing up, going down. Stay down there for all three sets. Yep. Boom, let's go to the next one. Then you could superset hands elevated push-up with a dumbbell row. Mm-hmm. Perfect. And this is what's nice about you training movements as opposed to focusing on the muscle and also understanding, cool, like we can pair these into movements that make the most sense to keep it as simple and basic as possible. When you're just getting into strength training, you shouldn't be lifting super heavy weight. You won't be lifting super heavy weight, and you really just want to be focusing on using good technique and getting comfortable with mastering these basics. Sort of like you and I were talking about earlier with jiu-jitsu. When you first start learning there's so many movements. There's so many positions, mm-hmm. and I think when you get really good at something, you forget about how complex it can be. So you take a brand new beginner coming in the gym, they see all these exercises, all these different things, all these muscles, I don't know which ones to start with. You first start with the foundational movements, and that's exactly what you're doing with jiu-jitsu. You start with foundational movements and positions, and you master those. You get really good at them. And when you're doing it in jiu-jitsu, you're not doing it in a live fight. You do it with just simple drills over and over and over again. It's not overly taxing. It's not overly stressful. It's just simple, basic drilling over and over and over. Same thing with strength training. When you first go in, you shouldn't be using weight that is unbelievably challenging. You should be using weight that is teaching you how to do the technique. And as you build up confidence, then you can progressively add more weight from there.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that.
All right. So let's see. Okay, here's a question. JL Butler 01 said, my neighbors are Jewish. Is it weird to ask if they eat kosher? I want to give them a certain type of chocolate for Christmas. What do you think? Is it weird?
I wouldn't think it's weird.
No.
I think it's actually really considerate.
Yeah.
The first thing I thought of was, oh, how thoughtful.
That's super nice.
Yeah.
I think it really comes down to how you ask. Like, if you'd be like, ugh, are you kosher?
Yeah.
Like, that's not a good way to ask. Like, ugh, are you Jewish and kosher? No. But like, hey, I was wondering, I sort of wanted to get you a gift, but before I get it, do you happen to eat kosher? Do you follow the kosher rules? That's a very thoughtful thing to ask.
I love that. Yeah.
I think it's something that it's really disappointing how many people choose to get offended when people ask them about their culture or about their religion or where they're from. It's like, I'm trying to learn.
It's so interesting. I can't even wrap my head around people who get angry about that. I can't even what? Why would, I don't know.
It's on one hand, they'll say something like, do better. You got to do better. And then
Someone's trying to do better.
I'm trying to learn. And so I'm asking a question. It's like, well, how am I supposed to know if I don't ask?
Yeah.
How am I supposed to do better if you won't educate me?
Yeah.
It really is.
That blows me away that there are people that would get angry about stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just blows
They're
me away.
Looking for reasons to be upset. Yes. They're looking for reasons to feel oppressed or looking for reasons to be offended.
100%. Always. Yes.
Always. Everyone wants to be the victim nowadays.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. Actually, you know what? I have a question sort of on that topic. I saw this years ago, and this has nothing to do with what this question, but I sort of on this topic of wanting to be a victim. I saw someone on Facebook years ago. This probably was 2016, 2017. It was a woman, and she got very upset because she was lifting weights and she had finished and she was putting her weights away and a guy came over to help put her weights away. And she didn't ask for his help, but he just saw that there was a lot of weight and he was like helping her put the weights away. And she was like, how dare he? He doesn't think I'm strong enough because I'm a woman. And she made it into this whole big thing. And I'm reading it and I'm thinking, it just sounds like something nice that this person was trying to do. What do you think about that?
I'm like, so my eyes get big. I'm like, what the fuck? You know, it's so interesting and this has happened to me at the gym before, especially with plates. I've had people come up and help me re-rack some plates. And I'm like, oh man, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's nice, right?
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. I didn't for one second go down that road. Like, it never even crossed my mind. It was thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get blown away by that.
It's very interesting, especially as a guy in the gym now. I find myself in these awkward situations because I know, like, I want to be there to help and to encourage people. And I also know on the other end, I don't know how they're receiving it or what they want or what they don't want. And it's actually really funny. I remember I posted many, many, many months ago something about someone saying they get really tired of guys coming up to them in the gym. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. Like, that would be annoying. Mm-hmm. But when I posted that in my stories, I got all these other women saying, I wish a guy would come talk to me in the gym, right? And it's so interesting because what some people want, other people don't want.
Yeah.
And so I find myself in the gym where I'll see someone working out and I want to go over and I want to just be like, hey, you're doing awesome. But then I don't want them to be like, why are they saying that? Da, 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 da. Is he hitting on me? Like, I just want to be nice.
You know, it's interesting because if I did it, it would be different.
Correct.
And it's interesting. I don't know if you remember. I know you remember this. Years ago in the inner circle, we did a compliment challenge.
Oh, I remember. Yes.
And I did it.
Yeah.
And I remember doing it and I spent almost all my compliments in the gym.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And some people had tears in their eyes. They were so thankful. Really? It looked great. And I said, yeah. I mean, your RDLs were like perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
They were so grateful for someone to take time to compliment them. I wasn't trying to correct their form. I didn't go down that road.
Just a genuine compliment.
Yeah.
We should bring that challenge back.
I think I was thinking that too.
Yeah.
That is, because it just, not all, you know, it's that saying, if you're not feeling really good about stuff, you know, go help somebody else.
Yeah.
Because that's going to make you feel better. You know, I was on top of the world because her reaction was so genuine.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, not everyone's going to be that over the top. But I think it's just such a nice thing to do.
Yeah. I think what it makes me think about, like my sort of uncertainty in the gym, what makes me think about is we need to be a little bit more understanding of I'll start this way. One of my favorite quotes that I've been using a lot lately is, we tend to judge ourselves by our intent and others by their actions, right? Which means we tend to judge other people more harshly than we judge ourselves oftentimes. And for someone to get so upset that someone came over to try to help with the weights, you can tell that person is looking for conflict and assuming everyone else is bad. And in my experience, the vast majority of people are amazing and a small percentage of people are assholes.
Yeah.
And giving people the benefit of the doubt. And for example, like sometimes I'll catch myself, and I know we've all done this, everyone's done this, where like out of nowhere, you've caught yourself staring at someone, but you weren't actually looking at them, like you were daydreaming in your head, and you're like, oh shit, I was looking at that person. Whereas someone on the receiving end of that might be thinking, why are they staring at me?
Yeah.
What do they want? Like, am I like, are they trying to hit on me? Or what are they thinking? Maybe I'm stupid or whatever it is. It's like, no, they're literally spaced out.
Yeah.
They're not even staring at you. Like their eyes are there, but they're not even really looking at you. So I've been like hyper vigilant about that, but it also sort of takes away from the gym. I'm like, I don't want to be walking on eggshells all the time.
Yeah.
You know, so just being more empathetic and aware that, you know, we're all humans and the vast majority of us are actually pretty good.
And the vast majority of guys are very good and are very kind and mean nothing other than a nice compliment or they want to be helpful or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, and if someone is being a dick or rude, like feel free to tell them to fuck off.
Yeah.
And like, if you need to go to the front of the gym and tell, hey, this person's bothering me no matter what I say, then do it. Actually, you know, that guy in my gym who's super annoying, he recently asked, he was like, why don't you like want to talk to me? And like, cause I've been very clear, like with my body language and all of that. And I told him, I was like, I'm going to be very honest. I was like, when I come to the gym, I'm just here to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm on the elliptical and you come stand right next to me and talk at me while I'm trying to get my workout in, it's taking away from my workout. And it's not that I don't want to talk to you. It's that in this moment, I don't want to talk to you. And you need to have these types of, if someone is continuing to talk to you, even if they're really nice, you can say, I've only got an hour.
Yeah.
Like, this is my time. Mm-hmm. I need this. I'm not trying to be rude, but this is my time.
Yeah.
So understanding that you can stand up for yourself as well without also being a dick.
100%.
All right. Let's see.
That was a cool tangent.
Okay, so Jay Zoe asked, how do I overcome fear of failure?
Wow.
I know, it's a very general question.
It is. You know, I wish there was something that you could say, just do this, this, and this, and you're good, you know? I feel like this is going to be, you're going to need to fail and work through that and see how you come out the other side of that,
yep.
You know, and be more in the mindset of, okay, yeah, I'm not happy that I failed, but what can I take away from this that I can apply for the next time?
Yeah.
And then it's going to happen again, guaranteed,
yep.
At some point. And it's practice. It's just practice. There's no like little tip or trick, you know, really. I mean, it is, I think you just have to go through it. And I feel like we all struggle with this.
100%.
Because I think none of us want to fail.
Correct.
You know, none of us want to fail. But the reality is we're all going to fail.
Yep.
You know, I mean, that's pretty certain. So it's learning from it. Maybe the first time you're fully aware of it, it's not a great experience. Okay, cool. It's going to happen again. So now we glean from that and we apply it the next time it happens. And we just grow as a person as a result.
Yeah.
Over time.
Yeah.
I mean, just like anything else, over time.
Yeah, I love that. I think Susan and I were just talking about this. I believe it was on your podcast. It was either that or the Inner Circle Live. But one thing that I think people really struggle with is they struggle with looking like they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They don't want to look like a beginner. They don't want to look like they don't know.
I laugh briefly because my husband has used that same thing on me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when I came home from that woman's thing,
oh,
and
yeah,
I was
yeah,
just
yeah.
in tears.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he goes, I know you don't like to look like you don't know what you're doing. I mean, he
yeah.
says exact words to me.
Yeah.
And that was part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, a big part of it, for sure.
No one wants to look like they don't know what they're
yeah.
doing. Like they're ignorant or whatever
yep.
it is. But if you're a beginner in something, then you don't know. And it's okay to be a beginner.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to not know.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to not have the answers. It's okay to not have perfect technique. It's okay to not know how much weight you should be lifting. It's okay to not understand this because you're a fucking beginner.
Mm-hmm.
So the reality is failure is a part of the process because it's inevitable once you try. The only way to avoid failure is to do nothing at all,
yeah.
in which case you are now a failure.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? It's
yeah.
like it's sort of ironic. Like
yeah.
the only way to avoid failing at anything is to just not do anything at all, in which case you are now a monumental failure.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to fail your way to success. You fail your way up to success, and that's embrace being a beginner. Embrace. This is one of the things I love about jiu-jitsu is the belts.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wanted to incorporate belts into fitness in some way, but it's very difficult. Like I've wanted to incorporate it into the Inner Circle and the app, but it's difficult to know, well, how do we progress them
yeah.
and how do we award them a new belt or whatever it is. But the white belt mindset, the white belt mentality, like you're a forever white belt, is big in jiu-jitsu and martial arts in general, in which you take on the mindset of a white belt. Like you're always and forever learning. And it's okay to not be good at something. It's okay to look like an idiot. It's okay to look like a fool, because if it's your first time or second time or third time, you're a beginner still.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
it's totally fine.
Yeah.
And I think the best way to overcome the fear of failure is to recognize that and to understand you will fail, but every time you fail, you learn and you get better as a result of it. And now once the failure is over, you are now better off.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
are worse off if you don't try and don't fail. You are now worse off. It's funny, like even today you saw in jiu-jitsu, the first thing that we did was we went over the move that I was caught in that I lost in the finals of my
yeah.
jiu-jitsu competition. If I won that competition, if I got gold, so if I took silver, but if I took gold, I highly doubt we would have went over what I did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But because I got caught in something and I was choked out, well, now I know how to get out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm better now because I lost than I was if I had just won the whole thing.
A whole new move.
I have a whole new philosophy. I have
yeah.
a whole new situation. I have a whole new awareness. Like everything is now better because of that failure.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great. I mean, failing's a great teacher.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is a great teacher. Unfortunately, I mean, would it be great if we didn't have to go through things? Maybe.
No,
but
I think it would not be good.
I don't think it would be good in the bigger picture.
No.
I don't think it would probably take the human element out of everything.
It's,
you know, we're not human anymore.
If you ask any successful person how they got to be successful and their road to success, they're going to talk to you about the adversity that they faced. And
mm-hmm.
all of that adversity is what makes them who they are today.
Yeah.
And you could talk to people who had crazy things to happen to them, whether they got cancer and they're a survivor or they lost a loved one or whatever it is. And all of this adversity, all these hard things that they went through make them who they are today.
Mm-hmm.
So failure is it's not only okay and normal. It's one of the best things you can put yourself through.
Yeah.
Because every time you get through it and keep going, you're stronger.
You're stronger. And this applies to being a parent too. Right?
Yeah, I believe that. Yeah.
Watching your kids fail is awful. It's awful. But you know that it's going to help them in the bigger picture.
Yeah.
You know.
I remember Jocko Willink.
Mm-hmm.
He's awesome. I love a lot of the stuff that he puts out. And I remember there's this one clip of him saying something to the effect of, oh, you failed? Good. You didn't make the team? Good. You didn't get that lift? Good. And it just kept saying good. It's just good. Like the perspective shift of, cool, so you failed? Cool, good. Now try again. Good. Yeah. Try better. Good. Do this. Good. Try that. It's having this mindset of, instead of when you fail, ah, fuck, you failed, oh, good. Now you can try again. Now you can try better. Now you can try this new thing. It's looking at it as an opportunity. And when you look at failure as an opportunity, the fear diminishes and the excitement actually grows. Because you know with every failure comes more opportunities.
That's a really good point. Absolutely. 100%.
So, that's it, Susan.
That's it.
You want to tell everyone where they can find you?
Yeah. Just you could Google my name too. Susan Niebergall Fitness. But primarily I'm on Instagram and my podcast is the Strong and Lean at Any Age podcast, and Jordan and I do a podcast on there every month, as well as here, and my YouTube channel, Susan Niebergall Fitness, and my book, kind of, if you want to read about all the dumb things I did and how I turned it all around, Fit at Any Age is Never Too Late, that's on Amazon.
I love it. Amazing. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you. Love you.
Love you.